everybody. Welcome to Spill the OT podcast. And you have all been asking for it, and I finally found an OT who does more alternative types of occupational therapy. And she pretty much organically implements this into her current role as a home health therapist. She doesn't do strictly alternative types of OT, but she incorporates a lot of the more holistic types of work into her practice. She also has experience working with people on hospice. I know that quite a few of you have been asking to get a therapist on who works in hospice, but that's a little tricky because typically if palliative care moves in, then occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy are no longer available for billing to provide coverage, at least through most insurances. She lives in California, and the company that she's working with has let her do this, I believe she mentioned twice, work with people who are at end of life. So she'll be sharing what type of work she did with those types of patients, and she's just a treat to talk to, and I hope that you enjoy listening.
So I have a master's in occupational therapy from NYU, and then I got my undergrad in sociology with a concentration in social work from Oglethorpe University in Atlanta. So I've been practicing for 15 years, and I started out in the school system in New York City in a couple different schools, including a new program they were developing called the NEST program, which is still going for children with Asperger's and high-functioning autism. And after 3 years, I moved to California, and I started acute care pediatrics at Loma Linda Hospital, and I did that for 8 years. And then 4 years ago, I moved to Glendale, which is in the LA area, and started working for Kaiser Home Health, seeing all ages.
Awesome. So I met you in a holistic occupational therapy group. Can you share how you've been able to incorporate some more holistic ways into your practice?
Yeah, I think holistic approach is really, you know, part of the OT framework, like what we're trained in. And I think, you know, a lot of times people tend to get out in the field and think, okay, either I'm in a mental health setting or I'm in a physical disability setting. So therefore I'm going to focus on that area, but really we're trained to be holistic and look at the person as a whole. In terms of holistic modalities, I did recently take my level one Reiki class, and I was really excited to find out that I could use that and incorporate that into occupational therapy, because I didn't actually realize that when I took it. I thought it was something that I would use outside of occupational therapy, but I have used it with several patients in their home. I do home therapy, and I do see some palliative and hospice patients. So I've used it with a couple patients on palliative and hospice care.
Ooh, I have so many questions for you. I have been wanting to take Reiki for a while. Mm-hmm. So how do you approach that with the patient? And what does that actually look like when you use it with them?
The way I approached it, the first patient that I approached, she was already using meditation. She was very much an advocate for mind-body healing. And it was an easy conversation to have with her. And I told her that it's a form of healing, that it's not a cure, and that anything that relaxes someone is going to help their physical health, because we now know, you know, the link between stress and trauma and health. So we therefore also know how we can intervene in a positive way by reducing stress to help someone's overall health. And so the first patient, it was an easy conversation. And the second patient was Spanish speaking. So I was explaining it in Spanish, which was more challenging, even though I do speak fluent Spanish. So with the second patient, I actually pulled up a YouTube and I showed her a few minutes of a Reiki session. So she would have an idea, you know, what it looked like, what she was going to be doing, the positioning. And she said, I'd like to do it, but I'd like to do it next week because I'd like to just kind of be prepared. And so we set it up for the following week. And I actually have a little portable aromatherapy vapor machine. So I just bring that with me with my oils and, you know, have them pick out an oil, and obviously they don't have to, use that if they don't, you know, she's not having any smell sensitivity. She's not in chemo right now, but that's another thing that I was able to bring into the home that was very easy. I was happy with that.
That sounds like such a relaxing thing to do with your patients. How much time would you set aside during your session to do that? Would that be the whole session or would that be like a few minutes of your session? How does it look like?
For the hospice patient, it was most of our session. Just she had a lower tolerance, so our session was a little bit shorter. But I would say the actual Reiki maybe took 20 minutes from the beginning to the end. And the other patient, it took about the same amount of time, but it wasn't the full session. We did other things because she had a little bit more endurance.
I didn't realize that you actually work in hospice when I first started talking to you, but I've had mm-hmm. a couple people who've been really interested to learn more. Can you share sort of the background? Because I was always told if somebody is on hospice, then they're not allowed to have therapy. So can you share a little bit how it works at your place?
Sure. So I work for Kaiser, and it is very rare that I have a referral for a hospice patient. I've been with Kaiser 4 years, and this is only my second patient that I've seen that's on hospice. So yes, I do agree. In general, when someone transitions from palliative to hospice or rarely from home health to hospice, they do cancel the therapy orders. But if for some reason it's going to make them more comfortable or there's some special project that needs to be done or they think would be helpful, then they will order it under hospice. So with this woman, they actually ordered OT to do a memory book with her. So creating like a picture book with memories and little notes written down for her, to leave for her granddaughter. So kind of sharing memories with her granddaughter that she wants to have documented and written down so that her granddaughter will know more about her life and the family life. So that was the reason that she was referred to OT. So we worked on that first, and then I happened to take Reiki and I offered it to her and she said yes. And so I don't really have a protocol yet. And I, you know, I think with these things, it really is just going to be patient driven. She did ask for another session this week. And I think it's in terms of, you know, care planning and documentation, you know, if these things are helping with pain, they're helping with anxiety, if the patient's able to engage in more activity because they feel more relaxed or comfortable, then those are all great ways to document.
Wow, that is really beautiful. And when I'm listening to this, I think OTs have a huge place in end of life. It feels like that would be a place we could be very complimentary in.
Yes, definitely. Yes, I met with my supervisor who's in a management role within our home health and palliative and hospice department. I met with her recently more about the other project, and she said that they actually wanted to develop more kind of what are the services that we can offer at end of life. And so I said, hey, I actually also took Reiki. You know, it was separate from the reason that we were meeting about the other project, but it sounds like, you know, some agencies are looking for services to offer at end of life. So I think it is a great avenue for us.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So I would love to hear about your project OM. Am I saying that right?
Yes, yes. So it's basically Project OM is an initiative to engage people in therapeutic arts with the added benefit of creating the art for someone else in need. So I teamed up years ago when I worked in acute care pediatrics. I happened to connect with a nonprofit called Mama Earth, which is here in LA. And they were already going to schools and different places in LA and bringing these beautiful mandalas for the children to color. And mandalas are considered a mindfulness activity. They're very meditative to color. So I asked them if they would come out and do that with our patients at the children's hospital. And they were happy to do that. So they came out and started, you know, bringing the mandalas, and the staff would color, and the children and the parents. And it was just a really beautiful activity. So years later, I was in a leadership program and we needed to do some type of community service project. And I suggested that we fundraise for this, for Mama Earth to continue doing their programming, but that we ask them to add this added benefit of creating the mandala for someone else. And the reasoning behind it is, you know, there's a lot of research showing health benefits of helping others and volunteering. But I started thinking, well, how can our patients get involved in volunteering if, you know, maybe they're in the hospital or maybe they can't leave their home, you know, maybe they are on palliative care at home where they're just homebound. You know, how can people with disabilities or acute illness be involved in giving back to the community and reaping those benefits?
That is just so neat. So you created this on your own then?
Yes. Initially, the leadership group that I was in, we fundraised for this nonprofit. And then the founder of the nonprofit asked me if I wanted to just take over the programming for it since I was so passionate about it. And this is, you know, I had been interested in the healing power of altruism since I was in OT school, you know, more than a decade prior. My second day, I believe, of grad school at NYU was 9/11. And so, I was living in a dorm right next to the World Trade Center. And
oh my goodness.
I didn't know any of my classmates, you know, was brand new to the class. And, you know, that occurred and I couldn't get home to my dorm. And I just remember thinking, like, what can I do, like, to be of service? How can I help? Which I think was the whole nation's reaction, right? Like, everyone wants to be of service in a crisis. It's the only thing that makes people feel safe and calm, and there's some type of hope is if I can somehow help someone else. So I end up organizing the OT department to make these little pins that we sold, and then we fundraised and donated money to the families of the victims. So if I look back, I think that was my way of healing while I was actually displaced from my dorm for 2 weeks. I think that was my way of feeling like I had a purpose and some hope.
I love that you're able to channel your grief and heartache and put it towards such a beautiful thing. And I think a lot of us should take a lesson from you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's, you know, a lot of people tend to think when I'm stable or when I'm better or when I'm healthy, then I'll help others. But the research really shows if I help others, I will feel more stable. I will become more healthy. I will be happier. So that's really kind of the guiding force behind Project OHM is let's help others in our current state and then therefore help ourselves. And the first patient that I did this with was a woman who had rheumatoid arthritis, and she had fallen in her kitchen and she had fractured her wrist, and the stress of it, you know, flared up her rheumatoid arthritis. And she was in her 80s, and she had always worked with consumers with Down syndrome, kind of in an administrative role. And she was also a caretaker for her husband, who had a lot of medical issues and was in the home. And all of a sudden, she couldn't be the caretaker for her husband. He had to be placed outside of the home, and she couldn't work anymore. And she was just really dealing with a lot of depression and anxiety, and just feeling like she didn't have her life roles, you know, from an OT lens. She had lost so many of her occupations and her roles. And she was definitely a giver. That gave her a lot of purpose. And this was actually, even before the mandalas, I asked her if she would make Valentines for people in need, and I would drop them off. And so I visited her one day, and her blood pressure was in the 140s. And the nurse had been there 2 hours before me and had also recorded it as being in the 140s. And I asked her if she would, you know, make some cards. And she started to color. And then after a few minutes, maybe 5-10 minutes. I said, let's just take your blood pressure again. And I took it again, and it was 118 over like 62.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, no medication, no, just simply coloring, creating these cards for someone else. You know, I had read a lot of studies, but she was the first patient where I really got to see this. And she went on to tell me, you know, I gave her supplies, asked her to start coloring mandalas. And I remember her saying, this is the one thing getting me out of bed in the morning.
Oh, wow. This is incredible. I just love your mission. And I think sometimes, like you said at the beginning, we pigeonhole ourselves and we think, well, I work in mental health, or I work in home health, or I work in this setting. And we forget that we're able to blend all of it, no matter what setting that we're in.
Yes, definitely. Yes. We are trained as holistic therapists. Yeah. And you know, I think sometimes maybe other disciplines just need to understand that, to understand that we're not infringing on their role, that we are, really are just pulling on our own training.
Yeah, that's well said. This is just a lot. I could ask you a million questions all day, but I want to be respectful of your time. Are there any other holistic areas that you're, I can't think of the right word, holistic modalities that you're trying to consider to use in the future?
I am interested in massage, but I'm really, my focus and my vision is really how to integrate this healing power of altruism into healthcare on a larger level, rather than just with my individual patients. I would say that's definitely my vision. So, I can speak a little bit just to kind of, you know, what my process has been in having a certain vision that's not traditional OT, and then how have I developed that, and what my path has been in terms of trying to integrate that into my career.
That would be perfect. That would be helpful. Yeah, okay, a lot of people have expressed interest in alternative careers in OT and ways that they can just look at it from a different lens. So that would be awesome.
Okay, great. So my path has been how to turn this passion into part of my career. So one of the things that I've done is hire an outside coach. So I'm actually working with my second coach now. I did a 6-week coaching program a little over a year ago with the goal of developing Project OM and integrating it more into my professional life, as opposed to having it be a volunteer project. And during that coaching, I started to approach leadership and management about the concept, and I started to bring it to the awareness of my colleagues. So I did some in-services for the RNs, LVNs, social work, OTPT, like in our multidisciplinary meetings.
Hey everybody, I am so genuinely excited to tell you about MedBridge. So MedBridge is a continuing ed site, and they have tons of continuing ed courses all available online. You can stream them at your own pace. They also have home exercise plans, which are incredible. You can literally build your own plan with pictures that can perfectly suit whatever client you're working for. It's honestly so awesome. And you get unlimited CEUs. And these CEU courses are just really intriguing and exciting. Like, I've done continuing ed online in the past, and these ones that they select are just very much in line with what I find interesting, and I feel like you might find them interesting as well. So, are you struggling with finding the resources for your time for CEUs? With almost 2,000 accredited evidence-based streaming courses, live CEU webinars, MedBridge is your all-in-one solution. And actually, if you use my code, it's SPILLTHEOT, capital S, capital T, capital OT. So SPILLTHEOT, one word, capital S, capital T, capital OT. You can get $175 off of your year-long subscription, which is awesome. I mean, that's like significant amount of money off. So if you are interested, please go check it out. Again, use the code SPILLTHEOT, capital S, capital T, capital OT, all one word. All right. I really hope that you go check it out. Enjoy.
I educated them about ACEs. And both times I did it, because we have two different, we kind of have a huge coverage area in the San Fernando Valley. So we have it split up into two teams, East and West. In one meeting, when I asked if anyone knew what ACEs were, no one raised their hand. And the other meeting, one physician raised their hand, which was really an eye-opener. Now, when I think of, you know, I feel like ACEs and trauma-informed care is really everywhere in the news, but it was quite eye-opening to see that in healthcare, it's really something that we need to talk about more. So I talked about ACEs and how childhood trauma, you know, affects physical health and how we might see that with our own patients, and then linked it into, okay, well, what are some of the holistic ways that we can intervene in health and improve health, you know, in a non-pharmacological way. And so the coaching was very helpful in kind of giving me structure, giving me accountability. I definitely got a lot more courage and started, you know, just talking about my vision and my interest with leadership. Another thing that I did was I found this conference put on by Schwartz Center, which for those that aren't familiar, Schwartz Center does trains facilitators to facilitate Schwartz rounds at different hospitals and healthcare settings, which is, are you familiar with Schwartz rounds? Do you have that in your setting?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
So it's basically like a session for everyone that works in that setting. So in a hospital, it could be from surgeons to janitors, all in one room. And different topics of healthcare are brought up. And it's kind of a coping mechanism for the whole hospital frontline staff, where they talk about different issues, ethical dilemmas. And it's a safe space for healthcare professionals to talk about their experiences. And it's a very non-clinical setting. So no clinical advice is given. There's no, you know, care planning or treatment planning. It's just this safe space for hospital personnel to kind of exhale and share their experiences and support each other. It's a really, it's an amazing process. So Schwartz Center puts on this annual conference in Boston, and it's all about compassionate healthcare. And so that was another thing I did, was I found this conference where I just felt like, you know, I'm embraced by this community of people with similar values. And that really gave me a lot of drive and just energy to keep doing what I was doing.
Do you have any pushback from your administration when you asked to start incorporating these things and bring it up during your, you know, professional development talks?
No, not at all. I was able to share with them that the project is pretty much little to zero cost, which was very helpful. You know, I think that's probably the first concern of management when someone comes forward with an innovative idea of a project is, well, what is this going to cost me and how much time is this going to take away? And it really doesn't, because now Project OHM is not limited to just the mandalas, but that was where I started, was with the mandalas. Now that we're getting into holiday season, I'm starting to offer like greeting cards. I have patients that have been filling out cards, you know, for people in a nursing home. And so it's not limited to just the mandalas, but the mandalas were kind of the beginning project. So for the mandalas, it was all we needed to do was make copies of the papers. And then if the patients couldn't provide colored pencils, I had a few therapists that just went out and bought a ton of colored pencils and gave them to me just because they wanted to support.
That's sweet.
Yeah. And then Mama Earth, the charity, is still sponsoring. So they purchased a laminator, and so I just laminate them at home and create a ribbon. So it's like a decoration that can hang up in the recipient's, you know, if the person's in the hospital, they can hang it on their IV pole, or if they're at home, they can hang it up. But that helped a lot, that there was really no cost to management, and it really wasn't going to take anyone away from their other job duties either.
Sure. Okay. That's awesome. So I do have a question. You decided to hire a coach to help you with your career. Was that because you were feeling a little bit lost in traditional OT, or what made you decide to explore that avenue?
Yeah, so I felt like there was...
Hey everyone, so I don't know what happened, but I record using Zoom, and for whatever reason, it just cut off before we were done with our interview. So I'm really bummed out. I did get to hear what she said in person, but of course I have the worst memory ever. So I hate to speak for anybody else, but she was basically saying that she explored a coach because she knew that she wanted to work with this more like healing and spiritual type work, but she was having difficulty finding a way to fit it into her current practice. So her and the job coach worked together to find ways where she can incorporate both. And it ended up that it was pretty fitting with her OT. And, you know, she mentioned that when she was going through all of this, she would go on Indeed and she would be searching endlessly for different types of jobs on Indeed that had to do with the healing arts. And honestly, I do the exact same thing. Go on Indeed and I just keep searching, or I'm on School Spring and I just keep searching and searching for jobs as if this magical job is just going to pop out of nowhere. And it turns out that what her and her job coach came to the conclusion was that you really need to sit down with yourself and take the initiative to take your passion and make a way to fit it into your career, or possibly go and explore that career on its own. While following your passion. So I'm totally butchering what she said. She speaks so eloquently, and then here I am. But sorry that I got cut off. It was a pleasure to talk to her. And if you know anything about recording, I'm actually not thrilled with Zoom. I've gotten some emails about people being upset with the quality of the podcast, and I'm not disagreeing. I totally understand that the sound quality is a little bit frustrating, and trust me, it's frustrating for me as well. So if you are tech savvy and have any programs that you prefer over Zoom where you can conference call and record the audio, I would love to hear your thoughts. And I'm going to put her information in the show notes where you can find out more information about Project Ohm. It might be something that you want to incorporate in your own practice. And I hope that this just gave you an idea that you don't have to stay within the box. If you're working in home health, she also mentioned towards the end of our interview, which got cut off, that she was speaking at a conference about mental health. So she works in home health, typically not associated with mental health. But I just think it's awesome that she is able to blend it so seamlessly and really just work on the person as a whole. And I know that many of you have been asking for people who are doing alternative careers and more holistic careers. And what I'm hearing is that you can take those elements and start immediately today. I should also mention I'm in a holistic OT group on Facebook, and I sent out a message to get an idea of how people were practicing. And of the people, I'm not great with statistics, and only maybe like 15 or so people answered. But I know that the mass majority were practicing elements of holistic therapy within their current traditional jobs. So whether that's outpatient, inpatient, schools, what have you, they are incorporating those elements in. There were two people who work in private practice. One of them works for herself. One of them works in a private practice for somebody else. And then two other people were practicing and not billing as OT. They were just taking elements from their OT background and putting it towards another career. So I hope that this helps you. And please feel free to email me if you have any questions or you want to come on the show, spilltheot@gmail.com. You can also find me on Instagram, spill_the_OT. And I hope that y'all have a great week, and see you later. Bye.